Welcome to Insight at CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Sacramento City Unified welcomed students back to class on Monday. These back-to-school conditions, although once again remind us that while it may be technically a new year, we continue to be at the mercy of the pandemic. In just the first days of the school year, Sacramento County overall is continuing to set records in COVID cases, outpacing the state average due to the Omicron variant. We're joined by Sacramento City Unified School District Superintendent Jorge Aguilar for a progress report as the district returns from winter break and is approaching a January 31st mandate for full vaccination for eligible students and staff. Superintendent Aguilar, welcome back to Insight.
Good morning, everyone, and Happy New Year.
Well, before we get a status check on the upcoming vaccine requirement, your district distributed tens of thousands of at-home COVID tests before winter break. Come Monday, 500 students and staff missed the first days of school after testing positive. Now, I know the district didn't expect the pandemic to be over come 2022, but does this environment and the conditions surpass your expectations coming back from winter break?
Well, certainly it is a very, very trying time, Vicky, and we're going to stay very vigilant. Not only did those test results result in that 500 number, just think about those students having come back to a school setting and what that would have caused over the next few days. But since then, we've continued to stay very committed and we've continued to provide tests to all of our students, to family members, to staff members. And we're still concerned about the surge in this variant and positive cases. So we have doubled up and are going to stay committed in making sure that testing remains available at every one of our school sites. We have care rooms. Thankfully, we built the infrastructure very early on, as you know, to be able to provide tests to students and to staff at each of our school sites. My own children have benefited from that, of course, as well as our Cerna Center. We've also now opened a regional testing center at Albert Einstein Middle School in the Rosemont area. We've done over 20,000 tests since the winter or over the winter break, but we've also had significant positive rates. We've had about of the 18,000 or so COVID tests that we've done between January 3rd and the 5th, a little over 1,100 have been positive, which represents about a 6% positivity rate. We've now changed our contact tracing protocols, and I'm hopeful that our community will continue to show us some patience and some grace. We're not able to continue the kind of contact tracing that we were doing before. Instead, now when a student tests positive, we are notifying the entire classroom, all of the families of students in that classroom, and then providing instructions for what the quarantine period is, depending on vaccination status and such.
So a 6% positivity rate at the district in just the first few days of coming back off of winter break. Given the rapid spread of the Omicron variant and watching other school districts across the country abruptly switch to remote learning following winter break, is there a possibility this will derail in-person learning at Sac City Unified in the coming weeks? And really, how do you plan and prepare in a way that avoids day-to-day decision making?
Well, that is key. We have, of course, been in touch, meeting very closely with Sac County Public Health, with the county office, with other superintendents in the region. The other, of course, risk is the staffing shortage. We have are seeing a lot of vacancies in both certificated classified positions. We had just today, as of about 8:20 in the morning, about an hour ago, 332 substitute requests for our certificated or our teachers. We had about 202 among classified substitute employees as well. That is a higher number than what we've been accustomed to. So we're monitoring that our principals are in classrooms. We are doing everything we can, Vicky, at this time to continue to provide in-person instruction to our students. But to your question, we are working very closely with Sac County Public Health, with the county office. I've also been in touch with some staff at the Capitol. Of course, we know that SB 98 has lapsed. So I'm sure that this is a conversation that is taking place inside the legislature, and there will be more information that's forthcoming.
Can you remind us what SB 98 is?
SB 98 is the measure that allowed us to move into distance learning or remote learning, and that, of course, has lapsed. And that is not a possibility unless there are some very extenuating circumstances. Otherwise, if you remember, the other possibility, the other platform is to move into independent study. So I'm sure that these are conversations that are happening, that we're all going to be expecting. We saw a new order this morning from Sacramento County Public Health Department, moving meetings into an online virtual setting now instead of in person. So things are moving very, very rapidly, which is why I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this morning.
Yeah, I mean, it continues to be a fluid situation in the third year of a pandemic. And what your district is going through is also happening at districts across the country. How are superintendents within and outside their counties? How are you all communicating with each other? Is there some form of mutual aid and the effect of sharing resources and information, even like testing kits?
Absolutely. And we're very fortunate in Sacramento County that under the leadership of Superintendent Dave Gordon, we met, for example, this Tuesday morning at 7:30. We have another meeting at 7:30. Yesterday, we met with Dr. Kasirye and team at the county, Sacramento County Public Health Department. We're part of large networks. Yesterday, I was in meetings with other superintendents. We have begun to share a lot of best practices around, for example, home test kits. We were very glad to send, for example, our communication strategy from over the winter break, the text messaging, the reminders, the instructions translated into different languages. This is a very, very fluid situation. And of course, we are depending on one another to understand what the challenges and opportunities look like on the ground.
Your district, Sac City Unified, received at-home tests ahead of other school districts in our area. But despite that, in recent weeks, I mean, you just got to go online. I mean, it's been really difficult for people and families to find at-home rapid tests. Where is testing availability as it stands now in your district? I know you've opened up a regional testing site. And has the district been impacted by the shortage?
Well, at this point, we are plentiful in terms of the tests. So we do not anticipate that we are going to have to make any adjustments at this time, Vicki, to the test availability, both at our school sites, at our district office, at our regional test site as well. Again, we're working very closely with Sac County Public Health and the County Office of Education. And we are going to continue to stay committed. Really am proud of our team who built that infrastructure very, very early on. And so we're not in a position where we had to start something new. Instead, we're just refining and improving. We've had some hiccups. Our lines went out to 47th Avenue on Monday, on Tuesday. We had individuals that showed up earlier than expected at Albert Einstein Middle School. So we're making a lot of refinements and improvements. The last thing we want is for our families to have a negative experience as they're trying to be proactive and trying to protect our community overall.
How do you all get a hold of testing kits? Does the state distribute them to county health departments and then distribute them to districts, which then distributes them to schools? Walk us through the logistics of this.
Well, it's been a combination. Of course, Governor Newsom's announcement resulted in those test kits coming through the County Office of Education. You can imagine just the logistics and the operations involved to distribute millions of test kits. We also work with California Department of Public Health. So there's a variety of ways in which we're working with different entities, depending on how the state is operating the logistics aspect of it. But again, the important piece is that we believe that at this time, we will not be making having to make any adjustments and are just very proud that, I always mention that our schools are part of our community and we are active community members in order to mitigate the spread of COVID. And we will continue to do that at Sac City Unified.
But should parents and families be prepared for the possibility of moving back to remote if something like SB 98 comes back, given just how quickly things are changing and developing and really, really literally changing day to day?
Yeah, you know, it would be premature for me to say to have a definitive response, Vicki. The one thing that I've learned through this pandemic is that everything is changing day to day. These are ever-changing conditions. And the best that we can do is stay very proactive, very vigilant. We still believe that the health and safety protocols that we've put in place, that K-12 systems have put in place, are working. We just have to remain vigilant. It feels like it's the beginning of the academic year when we all made a very, very deep commitment to make sure that parents understood what those protocols were, that students understood what those protocols, that our teachers, that our staff understood what those protocols, and we're going to continue to stay focused in those issues.
Moving to the vaccine mandate that Sac City Unified imposed last fall, the full vaccination deadline for eligible students and staff is January 31st. When you last joined us, November 30th, 25% of the roughly 19,000 students eligible for the vaccine had provided proof of receiving at least one dose. Where does that number stand today?
Well, that number is just over 50% now for our students and almost 80% for our staff. We are still processing some of those forms and some of the information for data integrity purposes. But you're right, we are about a week away from our next board meeting where we will present the most updated data. Our staff were very busy over the winter break, making sure that we continue to do outreach to both families, our students, to our staff about the importance of this. And we will have a discussion at our board meeting about that particular vaccination mandate deadline. We have about 1,000 cases that we still have to process that are in our system right now. And we have similarly several hundred for our staff. We're still getting about 150 submissions every day. So we're hopeful that particularly given the current surge of COVID, that our parents are continuing to do more research, that they're continuing to work with their medical providers to get information that they might still be seeking about the safety of the vaccination against COVID. And so we're going to continue to stay very focused on this, and we'll have a report to our board and to our community at the January 13th board meeting.
Right, and that will be next week. When looking at, so about roughly 50% of eligible students have submitted proof of at least one dose, but that means about 50% did not. And I looked yesterday and there's just a sliver when it comes to exemptions, like 2.4%. Is there any follow-up or better understanding as to why, you know, a little less than half of students either are not vaccinated or whose families didn't report their vaccination?
Yeah, you're right, Vicky. And if we just kind of compare ourselves to the countywide vaccination rates, certainly I don't want to suggest that it is our overall goal, but at least meeting or exceeding that vaccination rate is something that we're monitoring very closely. I do suspect that as the date approaches, that the exemption request will increase maybe rather significantly. I'm hopeful that that's not the case, that instead we will see vaccination rates increase. We know that this is a point of a lot of attention at the state legislature and across the state as the legislature, as we've read, will probably entertain some discussion around the exemption possibility around COVID vaccines. But you're right. Right now, our exemption rates are very low. They're at about 2%. And I suspect that that may increase. But I'm hopeful that instead our vaccination rate and proof and evidence submissions will increase.
When it comes to staff, there are about 5,000 eligible to be vaccinated. And you mentioned roughly 80% have submitted proof, but that means roughly one out of five are not vaccinated. Are they able to continue their work on school property or school transportation?
Well, we reached an agreement with one of our labor partners, who, of course, we all take this very seriously, and we have provided information to those employees, reminders about the significance of submitting information to the district. There may be a possibility that some employees will choose to take some form of a leave of absence while they're still accessing this information and eventually make a decision about whether or not to submit that vaccination proof or some form of exemption. But at this point, I'm just really remaining hopeful, Vicky, that as the date nears and that our outreaching to those staff members, that we will see an increase in in both vaccination proof submissions as well as exemptions through our risk management department.
Your district was not the only district to impose a vaccine mandate ahead of the states. Los Angeles Unified School District ended up pushing back its vaccine mandate from January 10th to the fall of 2022, partly citing concerns over transferring tens of thousands of students to independent study. Obviously, LAUSD is a much larger district, roughly 15 times the size of Sac City Unified. But at this time, does your district anticipate potentially pushing back its mandate, especially since you're going to have a board meeting next week?
Well, it's a consideration, but at this point, my hope, again, is that we will continue to see the results of our outreaching to families, to our staff members, and we'll see an increase in vaccination rates. Certainly, the consideration of independent study as an alternative educational platform for those students who choose not to get vaccinated, who also don't submit an exemption to us and also don't register for testing, then that is the educational platform that would be available to them. I will mention that we have continued to try to reach an agreement with our labor partner, SCTA, around independent study. We filed for impasse, and I don't want to get into the details of that. We were certified. We will go into mediation around a proposal that we provided whereby we would offer volunteer teachers the opportunity to serve up to 10 students in independent study, providing those students with 1 hour of synchronous instruction per day and paying them 3 hours of prep, so a total of 8 hours per week, so that families who may choose that educational platform would at least have confidence that their children are receiving synchronous instruction on a daily basis for 1 hour a day. Again, we're at impasse. We're going into mediation. That will be a very important consideration. We don't have staff waiting for thousands of students or hundreds of students at our independent study program, so that is going to be a very serious consideration, and I'll be able to provide an update as we get closer to our January 13th board meeting. I'm hopeful that that will result, that process will result in an agreement because we know that we do have many teachers that might be interested in providing those services to our students. And we know the significance of providing synchronous instruction to our students and to our families, which may not be the case for students that are in independent study at this time. So there's a lot of considerations, as you can imagine, Vicky. Our focus right now is to continue to stay vigilant and committed to make sure that our students have the information they need to make decisions as staff and staff as well.
I mean, this isn't the first time that the district has had disagreements or an impasse or mediation with the Sacramento City Teachers Association. This goes back years. It even precedes you. But given that this is a pandemic and this is an unprecedented situation, how do these disagreements challenge finding the best path forward for students and their families?
You know, I think at this time, given the pandemic and the serious impact that it's had on our community, Vicky, we will stay committed to demonstrate a spirit of problem solving. We don't have the solutions to everything that not only we, but as you mentioned, every district throughout the state and nation is facing. For example, staffing shortages. We have offered to pay our substitutes a higher rate so that substitutes don't have to choose whether to sub at Sac City or at another district that might have a higher rate. We've offered to pay our nurses a higher rate as well for all of the work that they are doing. We want to be prepared in the event that we have to quarantine a classroom or close a school so that there's continuity of learning through concurrent instruction, the independent study program. So what I would say is, Vicky, what you will continue to see from the district is a spirit of trying to problem solve, knowing that we don't have one solution to solve everything that not only we, but everyone else in the state and nation is facing. But that spirit of problem solving is what I think our parents should depend on.
As it stands, I understand that you're in mediation. Does the district have the resources in place if Also, as it stands, half of students eligible for vaccination but unreported or unvaccinated decide to partake in independent study. I mean, that could be, you know, 7,000 to 8,000 students.
Correct. We wouldn't, and I don't know that any district would be able to have has the infrastructure for that kind of effort, which is why it's so critical that we continue to take these considerations very seriously and continue to try to problem solve. But at some point, there will be elements to all of this that, you know, there just isn't an easy solution for. So I'm hopeful that that mediation will result in an agreement whereby, again, students that choose that platform are able to get those services that they deserve. In that regard, Vicky, you know, I always have said that this vaccination mandate is not just for vaccines. I mean, certainly that is what we would prefer, but really it's a mandate that you prove that you received the vaccination or that you file an exemption and that you register for and undergo regular testing. And so in that regard, because of the exemptions that we allowed, it really allows for choices for families to make depending on their comfort level, et cetera. I think the challenge right now is that we're not seeing the rate of submissions of either vaccination proof or exemptions that we would like. And that's going to continue to be our focus leading up to both our board meeting on the 13th and our vaccination deadline of the 31st.
Given that when we started this conversation, you said roughly 6% of students and staff or those within the district are testing positive for COVID. I think it was 1,100 tests that came back positive. This also comes along the CDC recently recommending reducing the quarantine time from 10 days to 5 for those who are asymptomatic. Is the district going to follow that recommendation as well?
Correct. And that's why we're working so closely with Sac County Public Health, Vicky. There's both quarantine for students who come into contact depending on their vaccination status. There's recommendations and guidance related to staffing. And that is where we will have to stay very focused. We want to see some of those recommendations also mirror so that from a staffing perspective, given the staffing challenges, we're able to also provide quarantining guidance that allows us to go back to work as quickly as possible, depending on the vaccination status. And now with guidance also taking into consideration booster status, it also becomes very important. So we all expect that Cal OSHA, CDC, CDPH, and eventually Sac County Public Health or local public health agencies will be able to provide that kind of clarity.
Yeah, when you bring up boosters, I go back to the last time we spoke when we discussed a possible timeline for expanding a vaccine mandate for students age 5 to 11 in your district. Now, this was November 30th. Do you have any updates on that timeline, or is that actually going to be a specific topic that will be discussed at next week's school board meeting?
That has always been a topic because it always has been a question both for our board and as representatives for our community, of course. What we have continued to do and will continue to do, Vicky, is provide vaccine clinics, and as we're doing right now, our students who are much younger are also eligible. We have 11 more clinics scheduled between just this December and January, and we have more to come. We've done 56 vaccine clinics, which, again, I'm very proud of our team for coordinating. Almost 25,000 vaccines have been distributed. And in terms of COVID tests, you know, this is changing minute by minute, of course, but we're at over 109,000 COVID tests that we've administered. And that, of course, doesn't count the home tests that we sent over winter break to our students. Again, I believe that even with all of that infrastructure, we're still seeing some of the challenges that we've been discussing, which is why we will continue to stay leaning in, and we will continue to stay very committed. And of course, working with our colleagues from Superintendent Gordon, who again has been really doing a fantastic job at coordinating how we are communicating with among ourselves, but also with Sac County Public Health. Mm-hmm.
Finally, I can't help but think of the staff vacancies that your district is going through. Understandable burnout for school staff, coupled with a record spike in cases, which ultimately means those working will likely pick up more of the load. What weighs on your mind in terms of how this will trickle down to students and just overall the district's well-being?
Well, that's, I wake up every morning and I'm very anxious about that. I just saw an email earlier today from a principal who said how difficult this has been in his 10 years as a principal. I'm hearing that over and over, not just from our site leaders, but from our teachers, from our district staff. And as you said earlier, this is a situation that is just ever changing every single day, and it's very fluid, which is why we have to continue to depend on our relationships, on a colleagueship, where we know that we can seek support and services from others, get information about best practices from others. But I am very anxious about the mental health and the well-being of our adults, as much as I am about our students. And, this is a situation where maybe in the future we'll see even the longer term effects of what we have had to endure as adults, just as we're starting to see the long term effects that our students have had to endure. And we're just going to have to remain committed to making sure that we do everything that we can to address those needs.
Superintendent Aguilar, thank you for spending time with us, going through just a myriad of issues that really is on the forefront of so many minds in the city of Sacramento.
Thank you again, Vicki.
Jorge Aguilar is a superintendent for the Sacramento City Unified School District. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.